right, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning. I'm going to briefly talk about one of the points that Steve brought out, which was an important part of this barracks project, which was the initial starting point, which was the intercomparison. There's no particular order, really, on terms of the authors. It's basically ARS people and university people that contributed to this effort. You saw this one earlier. I won't spend too much time other than just mentioning the fact that right in this area where the star is located at is where the intercomparison took place. I blew this up a little bit. This is not exactly drawn to scale, but in order to get an idea of how things were set up, these were all the different eddy covariant stations that were there. We additionally also had a couple of bone ratio stations in here as well. The NLAE, formerly known as NSTL, through reorganization and renaming of our lab, was one group of eddy covariance stations. Bushland had a couple, and then we had one from Arizona. Generally, the event took place from about May 22nd, about 10 days. It was over a winter wheat surface. It was irrigated. Out of the 10 days, we actually had about 4 full solid days where we considered some really good data. Although, you know, the hours show between 8 and 16, we actually had 24. But we tried to focus largely on the period where we would expect to see the most evaporation, since this was really geared more towards looking at evaporation. And one partial day where we had a really good timing where we just passed the center pivot pass, so we had about the wettest condition for the measurement, but only for about 6 hours on near the last day. We tried to focus on periods, well, not focus, we did focus on periods between this range with winds either coming from the south or any of the southwest, and even a little bit from the west. Realistically, the intercomparison took place right about in here. You know, this was very, very close. Okay. A little bit about the data. There were 9 eddy covariance stations. We had also had additionally 4 CNR net radiometers that we put out there just to compare, and a REBS. And also the 2 bone ratios. There was a whole bunch of temperature and relative humidity sensors from OU that were also taking part in the intercomparison. The mean covariance height, the instrument height, was about 2.25 meters. Slightly less than that for the net radiometers. In general, we did the best we could to try to orient the systems to about 225 degrees, which would be to the southwest. Each of the eddy covariances, so that we didn't get a whole lot of obstructions, was separated by about 3 meters, even though the image that Steve put up, and I'll show you another image, was a little bit less. I mean, it looks pretty crowded. We sampled at 20 hertz. And some of the output was, for all the stations, were at 15 minutes, except, as these things tend to happen, for some reason, one of our stations was only outputting at 30 minutes. So it was just a mishap on the programming of the data logger, but we included it anyway. Initial data comparison is going to be largely just with real fundamental corrections, which would have been the Webb Pyramid, the standard one, and then also the 2D coordinate rotation. Time series data were acquired, but were not used, but will be used for further evaluation. And consequently then, since we didn't use the time series, there were no frequency response or central separation corrections for this presentation. Here's what it looks like. Yes, it looks kind of chaotic, but it really wasn't. Standard CSAT three-dimensional sonic anemometer with LI7500 LICOR water and CO2 ergas. Okay, as you can see, it's probably about total from here to here is about 30 meters, so it's about 3 meters separation. So we're going to look at some data real quickly now. We picked this one day, May 24th, was the first day when all the systems were actually working and operating. If you look at the net radiation, it was a perfect day. You do see a little bit of a glitch right over here, and that was turned out to be nothing more than a little bit of a shadow effect in the early morning hours, because in all the days, it was also for a period of about 15 minutes, we had a little dip in here. So if we look at some of the initial data, mean wind speed on this plot here and wind direction down on over here, you can see the different systems, and you can see this is for the period from about 8 o'clock to in the morning till 6 in the evening. And what we can clearly see is we see some general, some very good agreement among the sensors in terms of recording the mean wind speed. And then we actually start to see some, this part of the time period represented more or less the local conditions. And then later on, there's a wind shift, there's a change in wind speed, and then we can actually start to see some the effects related to what is typically typical for this area, large regional advection effects, which is going to be kind of interesting to look at this. Wind directions, all the sensors generally respond rather well. There's some separation between them because, like I said, we did this with a compass and by eye, getting it 225. But if you're off even by a little bit, you will see a little bit of a difference in magnitude of the wind direction. But by and large, changes, subtle and larger, were clearly recorded. All right, so if I look at the evaporation and sensible heat flux, notice that you see the band as in the peak part of the day, you get a whole lot of, a fair amount of variation among the systems, but in general, they look pretty good. When I look at mean LE and the standard deviation, largely for this first one, it's about right here. It's about 8 for this one, 33 somewhere down around, 33 right around in here, and mid part of the day is about 357. Okay, notice right in here that this is the 30-minute part, and that's one of the first indications that we have may have a little bit of a bias issue with one of our sensors, and that was sensor number 6. We'll more on that a little bit later. For sensible heat flux, the same type of thing. A substantial amount of heat flux going up towards the surface, but then away when the sensible heat flux starts to kick in, we get some enormous numbers, minus 150. We even had a day where we had close to 300. In order to maybe get a little bit better idea of the differences among them, what we did is we started totaling up the ET for this period, so that maybe we could, clear up the picture a little bit. And clearly you start to see some differences emerging with respect to a little bit of bias. Again, that number 6 was the lowest. And in fact, 4, 5, and 6 were the three that were generally a little bit beyond some of the standard deviation of the measurements. But the other 6 were reasonably close. Okay, for sensible heat flux, we just converted that again also to equivalent depth to keep everything the same. And for the most part, when what this plot tells us, and I should focus that this is a virtual sensible heat flux. We did not all the systems had a fine wire thermocouple at the time, so we decided to just go with the virtual heat flux. The blue is the positive, and then the red represents the period during the advective period where we got downward transport. And by and large, the sonics are all behaving rather well under rather extreme conditions, actually. So that was day 24. We decided to compile 3 days now to see what was going to happen. And on the top plot, we decided to look at all 24 hours just to see what would the values would be. But then we also looked at it again from 8 o'clock in the morning till the evening. And in general, with respect to the magnitudes, of course, were different, but the trends are all approximately the same. Red line is the mean value. And again, we're noticing things that are emerging now consistently, which was 5 and 6, and actually 4, 5, and 6. The other ones all seem to be fairly well. But then something interesting happened, which was towards the end. On this day here, I had to focus on only 6 hours here between 12 and 6 in the evening on the 29th and on the 30th, and primarily because there was the center pivot happened to be passing the intercomparison site at the time, and it finally passed the last system at around 10:30, 10:45. So we waited till about 12 o'clock. And interestingly enough, that under the drier conditions, again, on the day before, number 6 tends to be fairly low, and so does 5. But yet, right after the irrigation, when everything was pretty well wet, we can clearly see that for 5 and 6, anyway, they tended to improve considerably, and were not so low. Okay, we're going to have to look at a little bit closer what's causing that, why under the drier conditions it tended to underestimate. Okay, moving on to just some indications about the sonics. The friction velocity, very windy conditions throughout this period from 8 until almost 7 o'clock. But in general, the systems are all recording rather well, but they are very large friction velocities, some of them greater than 1 meter per second. I wanted to make sure that under calmer conditions that the systems were behaving a little bit better, and in fact, looking at in the morning hours from 1 in the morning till 7 with lower wind speeds, everything tends to collapse rather nicely, again giving us good confidence in our sonics. Another way of looking at this was the taking the mean values of each of the instruments and then also the standard deviations, and we can see that by and large we've got some pretty tight sonics anyway. The vertical wind velocity, a pretty important component with respect to estimating or computing some of the fluxes, and interestingly enough on this day here the standard deviation for the vertical velocity is again very, very tight fit among all of them, which is, you know, we feel pretty good about those numbers. Finally, as I get down towards the last one, here on this plot here, we look at the, I'm lost, here I am. We took all of the nine measurement stations and we averaged the mean wind speed, which is this side here, which is the blue. And then we did the same thing with the standard deviation for the vertical wind velocity, and then we plot them together. And again, what we're basically seeing is what we had seen throughout most of it, is that very nice agreement. These are 15-minute averages, and you can see the response nearly identical all the way across. So we have a fair amount of confidence in that. We think that, at least from looking at some of the bias with the latent heat flux that occurred earlier, that you know, there could be some reasons behind that. As I said earlier, these were just only had the Webb pyramid and the 2D coordinate rotation. We did not do any of the other corrections. Actually, I didn't even know we had the time series for any comparison until just recently. But it was pointed out to me that we do have it. Well, by way of summary, the initial results indicate that in general, there are some reasonable, pretty good consistency among the systems. This is going to be really, really critical because for a couple of reasons. Doing this experiment in Texas was an outstanding opportunity because we had what is generally accepted the gold standard, some very, very high precision weighing lysimeters. And we've always kind of been wondering about that, you know, how does the eddy covariance, you know, even though the scale is different, we want to just, you trust those numbers. So in order to look at that, we needed to make sure that before we deploy the instruments, that we needed to know what the levels of uncertainty were in some of our measurements. And so this is why we did this. And what we found is that for this first initial look, that it's a little bit more complicated than we had thought, at least with respect to the turbulent fluxes for water vapor. Okay. Everything else seems to be pretty well. The responses were consistent, even under very high turbulence conditions, which is good. We did observe bias within three of the systems, 4, 5, and 6. Variation was highest under whenever we had the most turbulent conditions, which is what we would expect. But generally, no real differences with heat or any of the turbulence parameters. What is going to be done is we're going to be looking at all of the high-frequency data now and start performing all of the frequency response separation corrections, because the thing that we want to see is on those systems that were actually lower on the evaporation, what's going to happen to the final flux? Are the ones that were performing rather well, are they going to end up being relatively small additions, and the ones that were performing lower are going to be higher? We don't know that. And those are the things that we're most interested in. We need to establish that before we can finally decide what we're going to do with the final things that we do to the fluxes, so that we can say they're all seeing the same thing. We can now compare with the almighty Texas gold standards. All right, we're going to do some more statistical analysis to address some of the issues here, but I think at this point I will stop.
Thank you. Do we have time for one question? Do we have a question for Dr. Kruger?
Yes, John.
When you did the eddy covariance comparisons, did you
No, we did not have the soil deflux, largely because the intercomparison site was a private field, and so we had to stay out of the field. We didn't, they let us stand on the, play on the edge of the field, but not within the field. And in terms of constraining it, we looked, we tried to constrain it to the radiation, to the net radiation. We wanted to get two periods. One, we wanted to look at the net radiation when we couldn't blame it on the net radiation. It was a perfect day. And then we also have another day where we had some intermittent clouds throughout the entire day. We're looking at that. That was a good data set. And then we also have the third case where half of the day was perfect, and then in the afternoon we had some more clouds coming in. So by looking at those three conditions, and those were represented in the total from the 24th, the 25th, and the 26th, we're going to look at those three separately to see if, in fact, there's going to be any, you know, effect due to the radiation.
You didn't show any net radiation comparisons?
Yes, on the very first one.
You didn't go into